Hi, everybody. Let's see. So my talk today is about the desktop distribution. And that really, you know, means a whole different set of things. I'm going to go through them, sort of looking at how that we've been trying to do for a while. But and actually do that in practice as we're getting close to putting all. So the classic desktop distribution, well, what's it made out of? Well, it's made out of packages and more packages. And that, you know, basically means that every installation, every different user system is its own custom system. We actually, if you went to everybody in this room and looked at what they had on their laptop, even if they were the same distribution, even if they're running Fedora 24, they'll actually have a distinct list of packages. So if somebody says, we've tested Fedora 24, they mean they've tested some set of packages that are not the same as what you have on your system. And we can't actually distinguish if the set of packages you have in your system is a good version of Fedora 24 or a bad version of 24, because there's no definition of that. Every set of packages you have installed is some valid version of Fedora 24. That's a problem, and you know, that leads to another problem that I think we've all experienced, is you take any classic desktop distribution made out of packages, install it, and then upgrade it, then upgrade it, and then upgrade it, you eventually get something that's sort of vaguely like what you would get from a fresh install, but not very. We actually are doing every upgrade individually by picking up set that comes up with what was the same as a fresh install. And often you'll find that your set of applications you have installed is supposed to be default, or that you have some system service running that has no point there. It's from some input method we're using 3 releases before. And all these sort of problems mean that, you know, a desktop distribution can be pretty reliable. And I think a lot of the ones out there have gotten that point, but they're never really as reliable as we'd want it to be. I don't think any of us would really be happy about giving Linux on the desktop to a casual acquaintance saying, here you go, it's installed, don't call me again, it'll be fine. You sort of know that we expect that at some point you're going to hit a problem that you need an expert to be hands-on in the system. And so the question is how to take it to the next level and to remove that need for expert hands-on, to just assume that once you have Linux installed, it's going to keep on working. Well, the basic idea is pretty simple, and it's not new. It's that you have an operating system image that's fixed, that you install applications on top of it, which are made in packages. They're self-contained. They're not, I say packages, but I really mean bundles. I mean flat packs. I mean something that it comes along with its dependencies, and it doesn't need anything from the host system. And then the third thing, which I'm going to concentrate a little bit on this talk, is that we also want to support developers. And developers have development environments which are also isolated from the host, and that allow them to develop on any sort of dependencies, any sort of system they want. So, you know, this is not new. So the old PC did this years and years and years ago. Android does this, Chrome OS does this, and Endless OS does this in a very similar way that I'm going to be talking about, using some of the very same technologies. But I guess the difference here is I'm really talking about how do we bring this to everybody? How do we bring this to the classic Linux user, the classic desktop user? And also, how do we bring that to Fedora? So this is Fedora Workstation. Probably all have, either you run it in some cases, or you have at least heard about it, you have some idea about it. So what are the basic ideas of Fedora Workstation? Well, it's mostly pure GNOME. There are just a few things we changed, like we ship Firefox instead of web. It's meant to be a nice general purpose operating system like GNOME that really should be suited for anybody to use, but it has a focus on developers. That, you know, if we want to make it good for anybody in particular, we want to make it good for a developer. That's mostly coming out of what, you know, where we want Fedora to be in terms of the marketplace, in terms of how it fits into you know, for how Fedora Workstation fits into the larger Fedora ecosystem of Fedora Workstation and Fedora Server and Fedora Cloud. So Fedora Workstation is meant to be good for developers. So the project we've been beginning to work on is Fedora Atomic Workstation. Now, I put Atomic in quotes here because it's not an official name. Fedora Atomic Workstation builds upon a lot of stuff that was done for Fedora Atomic Host, and Atomic describes pretty well how it does upgrades, but Fedora Atomic Host brings in a lot of other things that aren't necessarily here. So consider Atomic Workstation to be a working name. So it's just like Fedora Workstation, but it deploys with OS3 images, and apps are in Flatpaks. So we actually have to figure out how we're going to get back and make it work for developers, because it has that focus on developers that it inherits from Fedora Workstation. So I'll really go over OS3 pretty quickly here, because I mean, it's been talked about at Guadalcanal many times before. It's basically like Git, but for trees of binary files. Git is designed to have a tree of source files, text files you can diff. And then it's very efficient for distributing them, for getting new changes. Well, OS3 is the same, but it doesn't really care about what's in the files. It says there's a whole bunch of binary blobs there. And it's meant to be your entire operating system tree, for example, is represented that way. And when you get a new operating system image, OS3 is very efficient over the wire and say, I just need these new files. Where is it used? Well, it's used for a long time in GNOME Continuous. That's our sort of test operating system distribution that we build every night. Every time a change makes, we rebuild GNOME Continuous. As I said, it's used for Atomic Host, which is something coming out of RHEL and Fedora, which is about really about being a very lightweight operating system to run containers on top of. It's used by Endless OS, and it's used internally in Flatpak, because if you have a tree of binary files, that's good for an operating system, but it also makes sense as an application. But okay, that's how we're going to distribute this operating system image, but how do we make it? What do we make this operating system out of? Make it out of packages. I said packages have this problem that when you make an operating system out of them, it's very undefined, it's not standard, but it doesn't mean that a package is useless. Some of the advantages of a package, well, there are years of packaging work there. If you think about something like the Linux kernel package that Fedora ships, there's a lot of intelligence, it goes into that, and knowing, okay, what version of the kernel should be used, how does it relate to firmware, all that. Things we don't really want to reproduce, you know, create a new thing within Fedora that has a different version of the kernel. That would be, you know, a huge amount of duplication. And also importantly, you know, if you're going to ship a bunch of software, you have to worry about security for it. You have to say, you know, what are the security fixes going in? Do they have CVE numbers? Are we shipping the right all these CVEs there? Are we shipping the fixes? Is this particular vulnerability fixed? This is also it's probably a couple of full-time people's work to track that. Again, we can't reproduce that within Fedora. We wouldn't really want to reproduce it independently. Packages also mean that, you know, there are a standard Fedora Workstation install includes about 1,300 packages. If every time any change went into Fedora, we had to rebuild everything as a big source tree, that would take a long time. And packages allow us to say, we're just going to rebuild this one package. I want to try out a new version of GNOME Terminal. I'm going to just rebuild GNOME Terminal. I'm not going to rebuild everything. And it's also, that same lack of rebuilding means that probably if you just update GNOME Terminal, the OS tree before that and after that are going to be pretty similar, are going to be efficiently compressed. And that there might be a problem if we're rebuilding everything is that you make the wrong change to glib, and every GNOME program has a few bytes of difference and has to be re-downloaded. So packages will also reduce the amount of updates. To make it out of packages, we use RPM OS tree. And RPM OS tree has a couple of different things there. First, it has the code to actually take a bunch of RPMs and assemble them into an OS tree. Secondly, it has tools for the client side to make a little bit smarter interface for upgrading. So for example, when you upgrade with RPM OS tree, it tells you, here are the packages that change, here's the old version, here's the new version. And then finally, RPMOS3 adds Obscility for layering packages over the top. So you can imagine that we have four-door workstation. We have 1,200 packages there. You know, especially in the early cases, we're not probably going to get those 1,200 packages right. You know, maybe we forgot something. Either you can assemble your own OS tree there, or you need a way of adding a few packages that you forgot. So that's package layering is. There's a command just recently added, RPM OS tree package add. And that basically says, add the package to a list of layered RPMs. And what then RPM OS tree does internally is it composes a new tree locally that includes everything in the upstream tree plus those packages you've added on. So to create a new OS tree, to go to reboot into it, you actually have to reboot. So this is not all that convenient, but it's certainly better than having to say, well, I need to create a whole new OS tree to be able to use this system. But, you know, you should think about this, about package layering, is the more individual packages you layer on, the more you have that old package pain. We don't want to have people have hundreds and hundreds of packages, because then there can be conflicts, then there are untested pieces. Package layering is really a way of adding a few small modifications that you need, and it's not a replacement for just installing arbitrary packages. And one more OS3 feature that's sort of cool for developers is OS3 admin unlock, which says, I have a local system I booted. Let me put a writable image on top of it. And you can change it however you like. You can do make install right onto your root file system. And then when you reboot, that's gone. So if you, want to try, really want to try changing some system component, that's a pretty good way of doing it and not completely trashing your system. Then, so that's the operating system layer. On top of that, we're going to put Flatpak. I'm really not going to talk about Flatpak at all because we've talked about Flatpak a lot at this Quadic. Flatpaks are how you assumptions. But one thing I will say is, well, where do we get these Flatpaks? If you'll go out there to flatpak.org, you'll find maybe 50 different applications in Flatpak. We're hopefully going to be increasing that. But the number of applications in Fedora currently is much bigger than that. I don't have an exact count, but it's probably close to 1,000 things you could say are applications in Fedora. Games and old X applications and all that. And we'd like to make these available without having to wait for everybody to get into the Flatpak ecosystem. So the plan here, which we have some prototypes of, is that we're going to rebuild RPMs, which have applications, and make them into Flatpaks in a mostly automated way. And we have some prototypes of that working. Alex did a prototype about a year ago, and I've started trying to integrate that into the Fedora build system. So I'll be saying, if you have RPM of TuxRacer, you want TuxRacer, we'll provide you a Flatpak of TuxRacer that just automatically created out of that RPM. And that usually works pretty well, and we probably can get, 90% of that 1,000 of applications there available to users as an intermediate step that will make this accessible sooner. So just like out of this, you can get unofficial OS trees of Fedora right now. We'll have more official ones built completely within the Fedora infrastructure for Fedora 25 this fall. Flatpak support and GNOME software is pretty good. GNOME software support for OS tree is still in progress. There are some initial steps on it, but we still need to finish that. And the idea of creating Flatpak RPMs, we have some prototypes, and maybe, in 6 months or a year, we'll actually have that up and going. So we'll have these Flatpaks available. So let me just quickly demonstrate this. So here's a bunch of output showing that the system is actually running RPM OS tree. LibreOffice on here is from a Flatpak. I've been using Polarion from a Flatpak to get on IRC, doing stuff with Inkscape from a Flatpak. So mostly I'm able to use this pretty much with without a lot of problems running an OS tree of the root image. So if I do how many packages I have, like 1,300 packages, almost all of them are in the OS3 image. If we look at the status a little bit more, this is where I got it from, the remote and the name of the branch within their version. It's like the 83rd build of Fedora 24. Some commit garbage, you know, commit hashes. And then this line here shows me this package layering. These are the packages I have layered on top. So I needed a couple of telepathy packages to make Polari work. We have to figure out how to solve that better. And so I have Git and I have GDB. And that's basically all I needed to be able to do some development and work. And then I'll go a little bit more in the sort of next portion about how I'm doing development on here. And then if you look back here, this is the previous version. It actually has the same base version, but it has the packages list is a little bit different, doesn't have GDB on it. So basically at some point I said, okay, I need GDB on here. I installed it and rebooted into the new version. And if I was to do a RPM OS 3 upgrade, it would pull a new version, a new nightly version from upstream, and then reinstall those packages on top of it. And it has those packages cached locally, so this is actually quite fast. Okay, let's see. But what about developers? Because I have like four packages there. And I mean, I think if you know, if you start with JH build, if you start doing any sort of development on Fedora, you're going to install hundreds of packages. You're going to install all these devel headers and GCC and AutoMake and GNOME Common. And if you had all those layers on top, that sort of completely spoils the point of having an OS tree there. You might as well just forget that you about the whole project. So how do we expect developers to work? And you know, I think we can't talk about development completely uniformly. There are lots of different types of development, which are all related but slightly different. Server development is probably the biggest focus for Fedora Workstation. That is what we're most interested in, is people using it to develop their websites, develop their backends. But it's also, you know, we also really want to focus on native application development. You know, native application development is what makes the GNOME desktop slick and nice and pleasant to use and makes it not just a big web page. You know, because all of us in this room are also interested in developing on GNOME, not just the GNOME applications, but the core of GNOME, we need to think about how that's going to work in this new world. How do you hack on the new version of GNOME? There are also scientific computing, there's you know, kernel development, there's mobile development, there's a lot of different types there. And you know, we have to sort of keep all of these in mind as we're working through it and figure out which ones we want to focus on. I've boldfaced the ones I think that are most important to think about right now, at least for the GNOME community. So, and there's some general principles that carry across all of these. And these, I would say, are what makes development more modern. Well, first, your development environment is not your workstation environment. I think, you know, we shouldn't have to say that I need GDK to compile against GDK, so I need to install GDK devel on the system, because that means I want to compile against the newer version of GDK. I need to upgrade the version of GDK in my system. Maybe I'm going to break my system. You know, oh, I want to work on this other project that, you know, requires a different version of GDK. Now I have to downgrade my GDK. That's not what we really want to be in. We want to say that, you know, developing against GDK, your environment is the GNOME SDK version 3.22. So that's not necessarily your workstation OS. Your development environment should generally be reproducible. This is something we've worked on a lot with JH build, and sort of gotten there, that if you build during JH build, we expect a GNOME application to compile in everybody's system. We don't expect to get bug reports that, oh, with this slightly different version of a dependency, it doesn't work. The idea of JH build is to have a consistent GNOME development environment for all GNOME developers. It mostly works. I mean, obviously, we still have to pull a lot of stuff from the system for JH build, and sometimes we have problems with that. And you know, we actually spend a lot of time maintaining JH build, but it's a basically a working system for that. We really want that for every application to be able to say all the developers have a consistent environment. And I think we heard earlier that PTV is going to use Flatpaks to do that, to say everybody's going to be using the same version of all the dependencies. It's going to be encapsulated inside this Flatpak runtime, and we don't have to worry about somebody using a different version of Python or a different version of this library. In general, your environment can also be work across different hosts. Now that we have containers and VMs, we shouldn't have to, I'm using Python 3.4, you're using Python 3.5, we need to make the code base work with both. We could say that there's a standard version that's going to work across different operating systems. It's going to work where we run our automated tests. If it's a web app, it can also be the same environment we're going to use on our deployment machine. So this is the idea of you do your development in a container or in a Flatpak, and that dependencies get carried across all the places the application runs. You know, I think it makes some of us nervous. We think, well, isn't this portability applications good? Isn't it good that's been tested in a lot of totally different environments? And that may be true, but it's not. As long as you can send the same environment to your users, there's no real virtue in saying, I'm going to work with all these different versions of Python. It's actually just an extra maintenance burden that you don't have to carry, that we shouldn't have to carry. Since I said server development is most important for Fedora Workstation, what does server development look like? Well, if you leave Java outside, which is a slightly different world, server developers tend to use lots of terminals. If you go on to look at a tutorial for how do you develop with Django or how do you develop with Node.js, they'll give you lots of terminal commands. People use a lot of editors, whether it's, they might use Atom if they're more modern, or maybe they use Vim if they're not so modern. not often people use really comprehensive IDEs. And, you know, that depends upon a bit among the language, but generally people are using more editors plus terminals. And every language and project different framework has a slightly different way of working. You know, there's not any great uniformity across projects. If you want to do an environment with Python, you use virtualenv, and then Node.js is a different way of doing that. So we want to accommodate this, but we also want to make it better than saying, here's a terminal, have fun, which is basically our approach to development now, is here's a terminal, have fun. So I'm going to demo some ideas I've been working with under the name, yesterday, Purple Egg for this. This is, if it's not clear, is a code name. This is not a final name. We're not going to be talking about GNOME Purple Egg. Okay. So we're going to start off in a terminal here. So Purple Egg has a command line version called PEG, Purple Egg. And same as those, we'll see. We'll start off creating a template here. Okay, now it's going to do a bunch of stuff here. And So, as I said, I don't have really any development tools on the system. I don't have Django installed on the system. So how am I? Well, what it did is it created a small Docker container here. It automatically wrote a Docker file for it. It said, it's based upon Fedora 24. It updated a few packages that I wanted in there, and then some ones that are specific to Django. And then it's my user there to match my user in the system, so I can share files between the container and the host. And a few more. Now, inside my project directory, now there's something called my Django site. Now, long term, this is the command line version. I think that the non-command line version should look a lot like what Builder has for new projects, and maybe really they should be sharing the same code. Do we need two versions of Templeton? Perhaps not. So I think one of the questions here is, how does this relate to Builder? And I mean, we don't want to distract Builder from what it's really about, which is creating GNOME native applications very slickly, but it's possible that there's some code reuse possible there. So it created a directory, my Django site here. And what's in here? Well, there's a couple of different things. And this managed py in my Django site are standard things created by the Django new project command. That's this template stuff. There's a vm directory in there, which if you're a Python developer, you might know there's one of the standard ways of in Python of doing a virtual environment. And so this is has a setup of virtual environment here, and I can do I could do whatever. So some package there. Okay. Anyways, that's not important here. I missed a basic step here, which was I need to actually go into this environment I created here. So that's peg has another command shell. I go into there, and now if I do. Okay. Installed that, yeah. So if I had any dependency that I wanted for my project, I could do that. I could use setup tools and so forth. Question?
There are some Python modules that rely on C libraries, for example, Pillow. How does...
Okay, so I'll continue and maybe you can start seeing how that would work too. But if I look at this, so I have a virtual environment here, but if I do how many files packages I have installed, I have a completely different set of packages here. I created this Django environment here, and this is, I created this Docker container here, and this is writable. This is not a immutable OS tree. I can install whatever packages. This file peg that YAML actually configures that. So if I changed that and added more packages there, then my... they would be included in here. So if I needed GCC in there, I could add them to this file, and then setup tools would be able, or pip would be able to compile whatever it compiled, wants to compile, or I could use pre-compiled versions from Fedora. So we have an isolated environment here that, you know, I had a template here, so it was easy to set up, but I could also write this by hand. I could write this by hand pretty quickly too, if I wanted to do it manually. It's trying to work with how things work upstream. You know, I didn't say everything has to come through a Fedora package. Instead, I'm going to run a virtual environment in there, so everything you fall in line about how to install Python packages works. And then, okay, so that's step one. But step two is how do we integrate this into desktop better? And, you know, how do you make this slick? So go to overview. Now I search for my Django site. Now I get a search result here from Purple Egg for my Django site. We launch it, and that brings up a terminal, and in there, and we see that little thing having a complicated command line prompt. I'm actually the project up in the toolbar. Slightly different attempt at a tab user interface. You know, this is not, again, prototype user interface. If I create a new tab, it's also within that. It's not an arbitrary terminal. And then we can even do more slick integration here. Let's see. Let's say I want to check this into Git. Yeah. Okay. So you see over here on... We have a little drop-down branches there. So Purple Egg noticed that you're doing Git here, and check your Git status up in there. I can even do Git checkout just being. I can go there, and I can go back to master. Now, the idea here is not to be a replacement for Git G, but to replace some of the stuff that we tend to do with the command line prompt. There's only so much you can stuff into your command line prompt before it completely takes up your entire screen. And I think there are other things where areas we can go with that. If you have a test server, we can add some interface to say, you know, click here to open the web browser on your test server. Or, I think that there are other things that maybe perhaps fit into the same idea of a little bit of minimal user interface that improves the operation there while sticking within the idea of a terminal. Okay. That's a sketch of how we might do server development. Native application development, it's Flatpak again. You know, that's, we want to make GNOME Builder good. We want to make GNOME Builder be able to build against the SDKs and do everything we need there, and generally, yeah, Alberto. Did I get it wrong everywhere? Okay. Fingers type what they want, whether you know what it is or not. Okay. So, and then the last type of development I want to discuss is GNOME development, And this is, I don't have answers here. I think this is something I'd like to discuss with people. JH Build has a lot of information encoded into it. It's a very mature set of configuration files, and it's pretty good. But, you know, we don't really need it for application development anymore. If we're going to be pushing Flatpaks, if you want to build new gedit, you should use the gedit's JSON file for making a Flatpak out of it. That will pull the right version of GTK source view. We can put improvements and be able to hack GTK source view the same way. But there are lots of pieces of GNOME desktop that don't work in that model, like GNOME shell or GNOME online accounts. And more of the question is how to uniformly give a vision for hacking on GNOME that doesn't require a lot of project specifics. Right now, if you want to hack on these more complicated pieces like GNOME online accounts or GNOME shell or, heaven forbid, GDM, then you're going to have to go to the maintainers and say, how do I do this? I tried to do this. It didn't work. How do I get it installed in my system? And, you know, you could possibly, you know, build the distribution package and modify that, but that's a lot of work. So I think the answers that say, here's how you hack onto GNOME, and, you know, I don't quite know how that's going to look like. Is that still JH Build? Can we figure out how to do local modifications at GNOME Continuous and try that out? You can build GNOME Continuous locally, but you know, you better have 2 days to let it build. So can we download the GNOME Continuous, replace one module, then try that out? How do you try that out? Is it one machine? Do you want how to log into a containerized desktop? So these are things I think we need to figure out going forward with GNOME to really make GNOME a bit more approachable and not have this sort of initial JH Build the world step, which is just not very friendly to newcomers. So, time for, I think we have a couple of minutes for questions here. Yeah. Okay, oh, it's over there.
So the way you develop new software, it's kind of also ties in like how you get dependencies. If you want to, like for example, GIMP wants to provide something for Windows, and they need to have a way to provide the dependencies there. And it's kind of like the same problem. It just comes up everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting idea that if we have figured out all the GIMP's dependencies to do a Flatpak of GIMP, could we reuse that to build the Windows package? I don't really know, because we'd have then you get a Windows equivalent of the GNOME SDK to say, here are the standard dependencies. So it's going to be a little bit tricky, but I think it's certainly a very interesting idea. Yeah.
So one of the features you showed about the OS tree stuff early on is that you can have like these writable overlays.
Yeah.
Is that using OverlayFS?
I believe it's using OverlayFS.
Okay. One thing we should consider is that OverlayFS does not implement POSIX correctly today. And to fix it is basically going to be a rewrite of OverlayFS. In particular, it can't even untar correctly, given that you run out of memory footprint for the directory entry caches, because things like inode data will change between when you started in untar, yeah. And then the inode gets like moved into a different overlay, moved up, yeah. And then breaks. So yeah. It's something that we're
I don't really paid attention to the details of overlay file systems.
Like it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
And some of the people have looked at that. You know, certainly the early versions of overlaying file systems were very bad. I think the thing is, this is just a development tool for hacking.
So yeah.
I'm much more willing to say we can do this that way than I would say if this is something we're going to put into production.
Yeah.
You know, we're using OS tree. We're not counting on overlays at all for that. We're just using basically forests of hard links. So that, you know, avoids that kind of dependency there. I think, you know, if you're trying to do a local install over your root file system and tar runs out of inodes.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, but it's certainly not something we have to be so careful about the stability of.
It also doesn't deal with renames correctly. And so like doing atomic renames over systems may not work as expected. And then the other issues, I think like SQLite and possibly BerkeleyDB are going to be in bad shape. And I mentioned those simply because we're probably doing some sort of DB stuff at some point in time when you're using it. So
no, we'll see.
We got to consider something else.
Cosmo?
Hey, I was curious about how you plan to build those applications that you mentioned before in Fedora. You mentioned like kind of like a transitional period where you still want to build them with packages.
This is a lot like what you were describing in your talk about what you're doing with rebuilding devs into Flatpak. You have to rebuild the packages to go to a /app. And then you have to package that up into a Flatpak. So in Fedora, this needs to be integrated into our build system where we build stuff, into our Git setup there. So, as I said, I have some prototype code for that integration there that does that. I guess early on, we haven't hit as many problems as you described with hard coding /user in there, but we'll see how that happens when we get more there. I think the idea is basically that people will have to fix up the Fedora packages when that occurs so they work properly with /app. And hopefully that will be minor modifications and probably a lot more in the packaging than probably in the applications themselves.
I'm very interested in seeing how we can use OS3 and whatever overlay we end up using on top of it to work on system services and everything that's going to be in the OS and outside the sandbox. I work on GNOME Settings Daemon and the Control Center and GDM and systemd services that talk to all those bits. And in some cases, we do need to be able to install an overlay. Like, for example, I want to be able to upgrade a particular library and restart absolutely everything that lives underneath. And you were mentioning that using OverlayFS for transient changes. I'm just wondering if you've got any idea on how to do that system services that we need to outlive a reboot.
There's another mode of admin and lock called hotfix, which will be permanent. You have more of a chance, obviously, of breaking things there, but if you want to really just hack up your system for development purposes, that would allow that. So that basically says you can make these changes and then they'll last at least until you're next to an upgrade. I think how to do it more cleanly is what I'm talking about. How do we hack on GNOME? It's like, how do I say GNOME Continuous plus this new version of GNOME Settings Daemon? And I think that's, I have rough ideas in my head, but I don't have firm ideas, and we can talk about that more.
Okay, thank you very much. Owen, thank you.